television programs. He was always sensitive to the impact of local experience, from school textbooks to grassroots political campaigns. The critical role of public opinion explains why even the most destructive ages do not last forever. I echo here what Edison said a century ago, that capitalism is all wrong, out of gear. The instability of Edison's day threatened every promise of industrial civilization. It had to give way, he insisted, to a new synthesis that reunited capitalism and its populations. Edison was prophetic. Capitalism has survived the longue durée, less because of any specific capability and more because of its plasticity. It survives and thrives by periodically renewing its roots in the social, finding new ways to generate new wealth by meeting new needs. Its evolution has been marked by a convergence of basic principles, private property, the profit motive, and growth, but with new forms, norms, and practices in each era. This is precisely the lesson of Ford's discovery and the logic behind successive episodes of revitalization over many centuries. There is no single variety of capitalism or organization of production, Piketty writes. This will continue to be true in the future, no doubt more than ever. New forms of organization and ownership remain to be invented. Harvard philosopher Roberto Unger enlarges on this point, arguing that market forms can take any number of distinct legal and institutional directions, each with dramatic consequences for every aspect of social life and immense importance for the future of humanity. When I speak to my children, or an audience of young people, I try to alert them to the historically contingent nature of the thing that has us, by calling attention to ordinary values and expectations before surveillance capitalism began its campaign of psychic numbing. It is not okay to have to hide in your own life. It is not normal, I tell them. It is not okay to spend your lunchtime conversations comparing software that will camouflage you and protect you from continuous unwanted invasion. 5 trackers blocked. 4 trackers blocked. 59 trackers blocked. Facial features scrambled. Voice disguised. I tell them that the word search has meant daring existential journey, not a finger tap to already existing answers. That friend is an embodied mystery that can be forged only face-to-face and heart-to-heart, and that recognition is the glimmer of homecoming we experience in our beloved's face, not facial recognition. I say that it is not okay to have our best instincts for connection, empathy, and information exploited by a draconian quid pro quo that holds these goods hostage to the pervasive strip search of our lives. It is not okay for every move, emotion, utterance, and desire to be catalogued, manipulated, and then used to surreptitiously herd us through the future tense for the sake of someone else's profit. These things are brand new, I tell them. They are unprecedented. You should not take them for granted because they are not okay. If democracy is to be replenished in the coming decades, it is up to us to rekindle the sense of outrage and loss over what is being taken from us. In this, I do not mean only our personal information. What is at stake here is the human expectation of sovereignty over one's own life and authorship of one's own experience. What is at stake is the inward experience from which we form the will to will, and the public spaces to act on that will. What is at stake is the dominant principle of social ordering in an information civilization, and our rights as individuals and societies to answer the questions, who knows, who decides, who decides who decides. That surveillance capitalism has usurped so many of our rights in these domains is a scandalous abuse of digital capabilities and their once grand promise to democratize knowledge and meet our thwarted needs for effective life. Let there be a digital future, but let it be a human future first. I reject inevitability, and it is my hope that as a result of our journey together, you will too. We are at the beginning of this story, not the end. If we engage the oldest questions now, there is still time to take the reins and redirect the action toward a human future that we can call home. I turn once more to Tom Paine, who called upon each generation to assert its will when illegitimate forces hijack the future and we find ourselves hurled toward a destiny that we did not choose. The rights of men in society are neither divisible, nor transferable, nor annihilable, but are descendable only. And it is not in the power of any generation to intercept finally and cut off the descent. If the present generation or any other are disposed to be slaves, it does not lessen the right of the succeeding generation to be free. Wrongs cannot have a legal descent. Whatever has gone wrong, the responsibility to right it is renewed with each generation. Pity us and those who come next if we forfeit a human future to powerful companies and a rogue capitalism that fail to honor our needs or serve our genuine interests. Worse still would be our own voiceless capitulation to the message of inevitability that is power's velvet-gloved right hand. Hannah Arendt, referring to her work on the origins of totalitarianism, wrote that the natural human reaction to such conditions is one of anger and indignation because these conditions are against the dignity of man. If I describe these conditions without permitting my indignation to interfere, then I have lifted this particular phenomenon out of its context in human society and have thereby robbed it of part of its nature, deprived it of one of its important inherent qualities. So it is for me, and perhaps for you. The bare facts of surveillance capitalism necessarily arouse my indignation because they demean human dignity. The future of this narrative will depend upon the indignant citizens, journalists, and scholars drawn to this frontier project. Indignant elected officials and policymakers who understand that their authority originates in the foundational values of democratic communities. And especially, indignant young people who act in the knowledge that effectiveness without autonomy is not effective. Dependency-induced compliance is no social contract. A hive with no exit can never be a home. Experience without sanctuary is but a shadow. A life that requires hiding is no life. Touch without feel reveals no truth, and freedom from uncertainty is no freedom. We return here to George Orwell, but perhaps not in the way you might imagine. In an indignant 1946 review of James Burnham's bestseller, The Managerial Revolution, Orwell takes aim at Burnham for his cowardly attachment to power. The thesis of Burnham's 1940 book was that capitalism, democracy, and socialism would not survive World War II. All would be replaced by a new, planned, centralized society modeled on totalitarianism. A new managerial class composed of executives, technicians, bureaucrats, and soldiers would concentrate all power and privilege in their own hands. An aristocracy of talent built on a semi-slave society. Throughout the book, Burnham insisted on the inevitability of this future and extolled the managerial capabilities evident in German and Russian political leadership. Writing in 1940, Burnham prophesied a German victory and the managed society to follow. Later, as the war still raged and the Red Army scored key successes, Burnham wrote a series of supplemental notes to later editions of the book in which he asserted with equal certainty that Russia would dominate the world. Orwell's disgust is palpable. It will be seen that at each point Burnham is predicting a continuation of the thing that is happening. Now, the tendency to do this is not simply a bad habit, like inaccuracy or exaggeration, which one can correct by taking thought. It is a major mental disease, and its roots lie partly in cowardice and partly in the worship of power, which is not fully separable from cowardice. Burnham's sensational contradictions revealed his own enthrallment with power and a complete failure to ascertain the creative principle in human history. In each case, Orwell thundered, he was obeying the same instinct, the instinct to bow down before the conqueror of the moment, to accept the existing trend as irreversible. Orwell reviled Burnham for his absolute failure of moral effort, expressed in his profound loss of bearings. Under these conditions, literally anything can become right or wrong if the dominant class of the moment so wills it. Burnham's loss of bearings allowed him to think of Nazism as something rather admirable, something that could and probably would build up a workable and durable social order. Burnham's cowardice is a cautionary tale. We are living in a moment when surveillance capitalism and its instrumentarian power appear to be invincible. Orwell's courage demands that we refuse to cede the future to illegitimate power. He asks us to break the spell of enthrallment, helplessness, resignation, and numbing. We answer his call when we bend ourselves toward friction, rejecting the smooth flows of coercive confluence. Orwell's courage sets us against the relentless tides of dispossession that demean all human experience. Friction, courage, and bearings are the resources we require to begin the shared work of synthetic declarations that claim the digital future as a human place, demand that digital capitalism operate as an inclusive force bound to the people it must serve, and defend the division of learning in society as a source of genuine democratic renewal. Arendt, like Orwell, asserts the possibility of new beginnings that do not cleave to already visible lines of power. She reminds us that every beginning, seen from the perspective of the framework that it interrupts, is a miracle. The capacity for performing such miracles is entirely human, she argues, because it is the source of all freedom. What usually remains intact in the epochs of petrification and foreordained doom is the faculty of freedom itself, the sheer capacity to begin, which animates and inspires all human activities and is the hidden source of all great and beautiful things. The decades of economic injustice and immense concentrations of wealth that we call the Gilded Age succeeded in teaching people how they did not want to live. That knowledge empowered them to bring the Gilded Age to an end, wielding the armaments of progressive legislation and the New Deal. Even now, when we recall the lordly barons of the late 19th century, we call them robbers. Surely the age of surveillance capitalism will meet the same fate as it teaches us how we do not want to live. It instructs us in the irreplaceable value of our greatest moral and political achievements by threatening to destroy them. It reminds us that shared trust is the only real protection from uncertainty. It demonstrates that power, untamed by democracy, can only lead to exile and despair. Friedman's cycle of public opinion and durable law now reverts to us. It is up to us to use our knowledge, to regain our bearings, to stir others to do the same, and to found a new beginning. In the conquest of nature, industrial capitalism's victims were mute. Those who would try to conquer human nature will find their intended victims full of voice, ready to name danger and defeat it. This book is intended as a contribution to that collective effort. The Berlin Wall fell for many reasons, but above all, it was because the people of East Berlin said, "No more." We, too, can be the authors of many great and beautiful new facts that reclaim the digital future as humanity's home. No more. Let this be our declaration. This has been a Hachette Audio production of The Age of Surveillance Capitalism The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power. Written by Shoshana Zuboff. Read by Nicole Zanzarella. Produced and directed by Dennis Kao. Recorded by John Kovarek. Post-production by Sean Bolter and Ian Lehman. Production supervised by Christine M. Farrell. The Age of Surveillance Capitalism is also available in print and digital formats from Public Affairs, an imprint of Perseus Books, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2019 by Shoshana Zuboff. Audio production copyright 2018 Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.